Welcome to Afternoon Tea with Richard Wiseman, with me, Richard Wiseman. In this episode, I chat to the legendary stand-up comedian Arnold Brown. Arnold first performed on the opening night of London's Comedy Store in 1979, and then went on to achieve cult status on the British stand-up circuit, and has even supported the likes of Frank Sinatra and Stephen Wright. Interrupted only by the occasional chink of china, the two of us chatted about the psychology of comedy, Arnold's favourite joke, and his love of Woody Allen's moose routine. So, Arnold Brown, thank you very much for coming along today. And here we are in the tea room at the Caledonian Hotel, Edinburgh. Very gorgeous surroundings here.
Strange enough, this reminds me of one of my LA routines. And I always said that I didn't like pubs. Didn't like the fighting outside of pubs. Mm-hmm. That's why I prefer quieter places like cafes, coffee shops, tea rooms. Richard, I'm a patisserie kind of guy. You never hear of fighting outside patisserie. Come outside, you just spilled my Earl Grey.
So, when you're creating material, what's the process?
I take subjects which have got great resonance for me. For example, in Glasgow, my father did like a bit of a drink, so I took that as a subject, but I thought it was funny if I said we had the problem in Glasgow of my father being, I don't know how to put this delicately, a teetotaler, and the disgrace on Saturday nights of him being thrown into pubs. The catalyst for that joke was the fact of drink in Glasgow being such a huge subject, because you either like it a lot, or I'm Jewish, and the thing is that lots of Jewish people, they don't particularly like drink, but my father did.
So it will be a sort of typical opening line.
I begin with who I am. It's funny because there's a guy called Jimmy Carr, you know Jimmy Carr, of course. And Arthur Smith said in his biography, autobiography, talked about Jimmy Carr, that even though he might be a great comedian, one-liners, and I thought this was a very interesting observation, not mine, unfortunately. He said he has no hinterland. The hinterland is when you tell jokes about yourself and people get to know who you are. Jimmy Carr is a joke machine.
Interesting.
And
okay.
Stephen Wright is a joke machine, because I've supported him, I've seen him. I'm a brilliant one-liner, kind of brilliant, but I think actually the hinterland that Arthur Smith was talking about is important if you get resonances from a background and you know you're talking to or hearing an authentic voice. I like that. The best opening line that I've ever done is it's very cultish and very, very indulgent, but I've liked it. I say, good evening, I don't like too much applause at the start. That worries me. That's how fascism began. I do one or two daft jokes at the start, like, for example, I come on and say, I like it here. I like it here. Then I move to the end of the stage and say, I also like it here. You know, I like, that's the kind of daft joke I've got. You know what I mean? But I've got a daft joke. I used to have, a kind of mad kind of thing in that I used to say, good evening, my name's Arnold Brown, and why not?
And but the timing is very important there, isn't
it? Yeah,
on
the timing is everything.
Timing is absolutely everything.
Timing is everything to me. It's everything. But no, I've always been known for my pause. I like playing around with, I'm a patisserie kind of guy. I didn't say I'm a patisserie kind of guy.
Yeah.
I like, I'm it's a kind of love affair of with myself. No, it's a love affair with words. Like, I'm a patisserie kind of guy. But I've always been a kind of cult comedian, and I predicted that.
Right.
Even at the beginning, I was there in the opening night at the Comedy Store, but bit by bit I evolved an act, and I used to say, my name's Arnold Brown, I'm a comedian with a cult following. Pause. The cult following me at the moment is the Hare Krishna movement, and I wish to leave me alone. So I knew I was destined for obscurity.
So is it a... Because there's not any pauses there. It's a kind of... There's a rhythm to it.
It's a rhythm. I like the resonances of words. I remember when I started talking about growing up in Glasgow, I came from slightly deprived background. I had this line about, I remember growing up, the deprivation in Glasgow. And at first I said, the six-month waiting list for people who want to vandalise telephone kiosks. And there was something wrong with it.
Okay.
And at 6 months, it was, I couldn't say 6 months. So it ended up, the final line was, remember the deprivation in Glasgow under the Tories? The two-year waiting list for people who want to vandalise telephone kiosks. 2 year, smoothness, 6 months.
Okay, doesn't...
It's just a sort of a feeling that doesn't really work. Yeah. I wish I could have done more daft jokes, but I've always been drawn to the kind of the use of comedy as a comment on class differences. A lot of the comedians that are kind of amoral in some kind of way, like they're quite happy to attack, you know, weak people or fat people or gays or, you know, that kind of thing. I just couldn't. I'm a kind of very PC kind of guy. My comment at the moment is that, you know, we're all PC, you know, and I said, I'll tell you how PC I was. I never even mentioned women. I mean, I've got a line about saying, if a comedian says the other week, you know, when I say the other week, it could mean months ago, it could mean years ago, it may not have even happened. You'll have to make up your own mind. I can't do all the work. You know, so I like the deception of comedy. And also, I always like to examine the reason why a lot of comedians and I get into comedy. And my line is, I got into comedy to get the attention I never got as an adult. You know, very, very philosophical. So, you know.
What is the reason you got into comedy, though?
I think, actually, I always... From quite an early age, I always saw a kind of a gap between, you know, the person I'm talking to, I'm thinking of something else at another level. I don't believe what's happening. There's another level. And I put that into my Uncle Harry. This character, it's a kind of mythical character, actually. He's 99, remarkable man, Uncle Harry, 99, and he's still got all his own prejudices. He still resents the people he hated as a young man, you know. And also the Jewishness is quite important to me, because when I began, I said I'm Scottish and Jewish. That's two racial stereotypes for the price of one. Perhaps the best value in London tonight. Pause. Perhaps not. So slight self-deprecation and... I like the comedy technique of self-deprecation. Unfortunately, I'm not very good at it.
That's very good.
Now, the thing is, actually, it's funny, I don't rate that joke because what happens is that is written mathematically and a lot of people could come to that joke.
Oh, that's interesting. So,
yeah,
so,
no, it's
so
not
it feels too logical.
It's too logical.
Formulaic.
Yeah, it's too formulaic. But the thing is, a lot of people like the joke.
Mm.
But I like to do a joke which is that no one else could be doing. And that's a terrible ego.
And are you trying to make everyone laugh in the audience? I mean, if only 10% got a joke you found funny, is that still worth doing?
It's one of my favourite routines. I've always liked to do it, but only under certain... comedy condition, is it funny? Walking in the streets of Glasgow and a man came up to me and said, have you got an encyclopedia on you, Jimmy? I said, what are you talking about, encyclopedia? What do you want an encyclopedia for? He says, I want to settle an argument. I said, an argument? What are you talking about? What argument? He says, my mate Sandy says, you've got an encyclopedia on you. Sometimes comedians got little favourite jokes,
okay, yeah.
Which... you cling to despite public demand. Do you know what I mean?
A lack of it, yes.
A lack of it, yes. Yeah.
Okay. So in terms of favourite jokes, jokes of other performers or yours, what rates up there as your favourite ones?
Oh, well, I like Jerry Sadovich, you know, the angry Glaswegian comedian.
Mm.
And he's known for this anger and outrageousness, but he's got some great jokes. There's one favourite joke of mine. He goes into Foyles, the big bookshop in London, Charing Cross Road, and then he says, you know, he asks for a book, and the guy behind the counter said, "I'm sorry, sir, we haven't got that in stock." And then Jerry says meaningfully, "What else have you got?" It's a great joke.
Yeah.
And the other routine that is not really what I do, but there was a great Jewish-American comedian, Jack Benny.
Mm.
Now, he was known for the characteristic of meanness. And he's got a sketch, famous sketch, in which he's out in the streets of New York, and a guy with a gun comes up to him and says, "Your money or your life?" And there's a big pause, and Jack Benny says, "I'm thinking about it."
Sorry. And both of those comedians are Jewish, as you are.
Yes.
So what's the contribution of that to humour? I mean, Jewish humour is a well-known genre.
Yeah, I think actually the thing is that the Jewish characteristic of humour is, because they were the traditional outsiders, they always made the joke against themselves before other people.
Mm.
And it was based on self-deprecation and trying to fit into societies and not feeling comfortable. I mean, one of my favourite jokes is Jackie Mason. He says, in American football, at the beginning of the game, they all huddled together in the middle of the pitch. He says, you know, at one time I was so paranoid, I thought they were talking about me. Jewish humour is delicious because it doesn't attack the weak, the dispossessed and all that. It's based on the insecurities, and I find that kind of humour great.
And have you always been a funny person?
Comedians are kind of manufactured from quite an early age. You don't become a comedian. I mean, even though I got into comedy when I was over 40, but I was already... It was that inclination, you know.
From a very young age.
Yeah, I didn't feel at ease, you know. So you make jokes to kind of break the ice or to feel better.
Okay.
So one of the jokes that I did was about my father, and this is a formula joke. So I wasn't sure I should be doing it, because he had a stutter, this is true.
Mm.
My father had a stutter. And I say that without any hesitation whatsoever. No, the thing is that I regard that as a formula joke. That's not a joke that I'm proud of, but it's something that people laugh at.
And in terms of your kind of comedy heroes, I've read that Chick Murray is a big... both an influence on you and a hero.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I think more influential was Woody Allen, actually. You know the Moose routine?
Mm.
If anyone is interested in comedy and comedy performing and writing, the Moose routine is probably the best word-for-word routine of all time.
Oh, the Moose routine is on YouTube, and some
vocabulary. It's
fantastic.
Brilliant.
It's also very very efficient use of words and pauses. It is brilliant.
Yeah, also, there's a big dispute, or not dispute, big kind of argument about which... I mean, Sid Caesar and all these kind of, again, Groucho Marx, all these people, which word is funny?
Mm.
Like, in the routine, the moose mingled.
Mm.
The word mingled is just fantastic. It's got alliteration, but it's got visual pictures there. It's fantastic.
And I'm also quite fascinated by the psychology of comedians as opposed to just the psychology of comedy. And obviously you know a lot of comedians.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of their psychology, what kind of traits do they share, if they share any at all? I mean, people talk about comedians being sort of, you know, they're funny on stage, but they're sad people off stage, or they're very insecure, or those sorts of things. Is that those sorts of things true in your experience?
The main thing about comedians is they're very self-opinionated. They're very strong in their the way that they say things. They you can't have comedy in a kind of middle of the road way. The best comedy is exaggerated. It's big pictures. It's there's no doubt what they're saying, and they don't take balanced views of things. Okay. It's very kind of they either love something or hate something.
That's interesting.
And the actual intensity of the hatred, right, is a certain subject. Like Jimmy Carr has got intensity of hatred. They're very intense. They're not measured people. That's why, I mean, Lenny Bruce was into drugs.
Okay.
You know, they're very intense in their personal life. They've lived life.
And have you ever died when you've been up there?
Of course. Sometimes it is a very uncomfortable feeling because you know, you're in the wrong venue and people don't understand what you're saying. I mean, one of the most flamboyant gigs I ever did was 1990 in Glasgow, European City of Culture celebrations in Ibrox Park before 10,000 people. I did 15 minutes before Frank Sinatra, and people were moving around all the time. The first few rows were interest, but there was no interest because I wasn't big enough. I had come to see Frank Sinatra. But I mean, I got my little dig in. I said, being Scottish, I told Frank that his opening, being in Scotland, that his opening song should be Fly Me to the Noon. So out of that difficulty with Frank Sinatra, I got a nice routine, which I did about that. I said, well, after the gig, you know, he went off by helicopter. There was no reaction from him. And, you know, no one said how I had done. And they were all around Frank. And, you know, I didn't even get to meet him. And I went back to my hotel and thought, God, this is the guy. Is the world's greatest almost living performer. He was 75 at the time.
Okay, yeah.
And there was no feedback whatsoever from anyone. I mean, and particularly from him. I thought, you know, cherished a photograph with him or shaking my hand or his manager, nothing. So I said, what does he think of my act? Because he must have been listening.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, this is the world's greatest living entertainer. And I know that he's had, you know, rumours of his association with the mafia and all that kind of thing, but he's still the world's greatest living entertainer, even when he's 75. And this is the biggest gig of my life, but no reaction. And what does he think of me? So I goes back to my hotel room and I just slip into bed, and there between the sheets was a horse's head.
Lots of people listening to this, I suspect, will want to be comedian. Do you have any advice, any thoughts on how you develop, how you grow, how you know what's the key to what you've had, which is a very successful career in comedy?
Reasonably, mm-hmm. You've got to go through all this baptism of fire. Like there's another Jewish comedian who died, 100 years old, George Burns. Mm. He said it was important for comedians to die. You know, you've got to go through that. But if you can get through all that pain and difficulty, and you want to do it, that means you're a comedian. But you've got to have a very clear, defined aspect of yourself that you want. You're dying to tell your story. You've got to be very impassioned. You can't be middle of the road about it.
Okay.
You've got to be very impassioned. You've got to have a very kind of thick skin. You've got to have a strong personality. You've got to have a good partner to help you when things are difficult. All I can say is good luck, and a final thing to you, Richard, is it's only since talking to you at the Caledonian Hotel, having tea with you this afternoon during the Edinburgh Festival, that I've realised, maybe for the first time, how interesting I am.
Arnold Brown, thank you.
Thank you.